From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and also on demand as a podcast. It is Friday, March 22nd, 2024. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein Gunashish, and thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, Juno Community Band's Spring Taku Winds Concert, Wild West and the Gentle Flute, will feature flautist Inga White, and we're going to have a preview of that. Perseverance Theater's annual fundraising raffle is in its 40th year. We'll talk raffles, shows, and more with the Perseverance folks. And we'll hear some past recordings from the KTOO studio of upcoming Folkfest artists, as Folkfest is right around the corner. Those conversations plus Curious Juno coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And a reminder, the Thunder Mountain girls and boys basketball teams are both in the state tournament, and they're playing this afternoon and this evening, and you can Google that, and you'll find a couple of feeds that are online, and you can watch the game live as it happens. It's going to be exciting. Pulling for them. In weather, beautiful sunny skies for this entire weekend. Highs in the mid-40s and down near freezing at night.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak gunshish.
And now a new Curious Juno. KTOO's Anna Canny has this week's story.
So, you've got a beat-up pair of shoes that still have a little life left in them. Or some clothes that your kids have outgrown. Maybe old home decor that's just not your style anymore. Where does all of that stuff end up in Juno? Dick Wood is wrestling white garbage bags and cardboard boxes out of the back of his beat-up red car.
Mostly kids' stuff.
Books, toys, and clothes that once belonged to his son, who's 35 now with a brand new baby.
We were saving it for his kid, and they don't want it, so.
So, Wood is here for donation day at the Salvation Army thrift store. First, he pulls out a plastic yellow horse that's mounted on rusted springs.
Yeah, it's a nice little horse.
He hands it off to volunteer Jamie Raymond, who sets it down in front of an empty shipping container in the store's back lot.
I had one like that back in the 60s.
Then comes a crib with a faded yellow and orange cover.
Bassinet. Vintage. Vintage is hot.
Juno residents come here hoping to get rid of their vintage wares or their junk every Saturday. Behind Wood, there's a line of cars that spills over into the parking lot across the road. Once the shipping container fills up, everyone who's left is turned away. On some weeks, the store gets too full and they have to stop accepting donations altogether. When that happens, you might be stuck lugging around a bunch of stuff that you don't really have a use for anymore. That's happened to many people, including KTOO listener Mary McEwen.
I mean, a lot of us have, like, a bag somewhere that's like, oh man, next time I have time on a Saturday morning for that one window where you can drop things off at Salvation Army.
For this installment of Curious Juno, she wanted to know, why is it so hard to donate things in town? And what alternatives are there when the thrift stores fill up? The Salvation Army store, manager Christina Austin is directing the line of cars. She's bundled up, but the weather hints of spring. She said that usually leads to a spike in donations. Juno's seasonal residents also contribute to the ebb and flow. Austin said there's more people trying to get rid of things at the end of the legislative session or the end of the tourist season.
They just get stuff just for the season and then they fill their apartment or their studio just temporarily. So some people always say that they're just borrowing it and it's coming back to the store.
The store's capacity is mostly limited by staffing, Austin said. She's one of two full-time employees, but all the sorting and pricing is done by volunteers. Those volunteers ebb and flow with the seasons, too. Folks drop off during the holidays or over the summer, and during the height of the pandemic, a lot of volunteer groups disbanded. It's taken a while to rebuild them. Mary Ellen Frank has stuck around. She spends every third Saturday in front of a giant sorting table that's in the back of the store.
I don't know why the kitchen sink has to be here. I don't even think I could pick that up. Yeah, that's an unusual. There's always something new.
Not one, but two kitchen sinks sit on the corner of the table. There's also a box of dented water bottles and a pair of headphones, a vintage teasing comb from the 1960s, and a little music box.
Sankyo from Japan.
Teeny tiny.
Frank's job is to decide what's sellable. As an avid secondhand shopper herself, she approaches the table with an open mind.
So we've got a good balance of people that are kind of like, eh, you know, get rid of it, and me like, oh, that has so much potential.
Still, Frank estimates that they throw out about 20% of what gets dropped off. So far, she's discarded some cloth face masks, a tote bag with a torn handle, and a scorched, stained potholder. And it's not unheard of for people to donate straight up trash. Austin worries that could become more common because of the rate hikes at the landfill. But even for perfectly usable items, Juno's thrift stores can barely keep up. The St. Vincent de Paul store in the Valley has more full-time staff, and they accept donations 4 days a week instead of just one. Store manager Sharon Mallett said they took more than 500 donations in February.
Clothing, we have an abundance of. We never lack for clothing because we get so many donated.
By March, St. Vincent de Paul had posted a sign that says, "No more clothes," in the window. If things don't sell, they might be off to the landfill. But Mallett says she does her best to divert as much as she can. She learned that while growing up in the Caribbean.
I grew up on an island, so this to me, I think I just fit right in because I remember as a kid, you made everything last or you reused it a different way.
Items that are beat up but still usable go to the St. Vincent de Paul Free Store. Shrunken sweaters are put aside for a local artist who uses them to make mittens for people experiencing homelessness. And ripped cotton t-shirts become rags that the store sells to boat owners and contractors. After local artist Mary McEwen submitted her Curious Juno question, she found herself dreaming up her own ways to reuse the clothing that she and her friends had piling up. McEwen sits at a vintage loom in her weaving studio downtown. The room is cluttered with used clothes. In one corner, a bag of denim. On the floor, a stack of misprinted t-shirts.
I have, this is my sock bin. This is my selvage bin. So I showed you the skeleton of pants. Here's the skeleton of a shirt.
She picks up what's left of a pink sweatshirt and cuts a strand.
I'm just going to cut this to be a little thinner. See if that looks a bit better on the loom.
Then she passes it through the threads, which are pulled taut on her loom. And she pulls back the machine's wooden arm. Eventually, the sweatshirt, along with a pair of old jeans and some scraps of cotton fabric, will become a rag rug. Rugs made from denim, wool sweaters, and even plastic bags are scattered all around the studio. These colorful woven rugs have been a way to salvage scrap fabric for hundreds of years.
What if we had this, we used this kind of old-timey solution to this current problem?
Soon she found out that her friends and family had plenty of materials for her to work with.
People were like, oh, I totally have a sack of jeans that, you know, has the crotch blown out and I mean, they're not really worth donating, but I don't want to throw them out. That's what everyone kept saying.
McEwen's rugs give them an alternative to thrift store donations. And for McEwen, it's a relief to give new life to her old clothes as a piece of usable art. In Juno, I'm Anna Canny.
Oh, some of the most recognizable sounds and notes in all of music come from Westerns, and that's one thing that's going to be looked at in the upcoming concert series that's going to be happening called Wild West and the Gentle Flute. It's happening March 23rd. That's tomorrow, 7 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School. And it's the Taku Winds concert, and talking to us about that right now are folks from Juneau Community Bands, including people who are going to be performing that. And right now we've got Sarah McNair Grove, Todd Hunt, and Inga White, who is the flute player, as you said. You prefer that over flouty, flutey, flouty, whatever. I don't know how to say that stuff.
Definitely old
flutey, flouty. Yeah. Flutey, flouty. And, but thanks to everyone for coming. Appreciate having you here. We were just kind of talking a little bit about how fun it is to just think about this music and its place in cinematic history, but also just in the sounds in general that we're used to, the orchestrations that we're used to. Tell me a little bit about that, Todd. Just get some of the background of how this has worked its way into the common vernacular of how we think about it.
Yeah, because you know, the genre of movies is huge, and it reaches everybody. And you know, there's been a lot of great, like truly great music that has been in movies, like from the 30s on.
And some of the ways it's the movies are the way that, you know, true orchestral music has continued and has relevance in
today. And people hear it and like they know what an orchestra sounds like, even if they've never been to an orchestra concert or never gotten an orchestra CD or anything like that. They've been to the movies.
Yeah.
And you know, you go to almost anything nowadays. Yeah. And you can get that, you know, part of that connection.
There's something, even in the movies that we think of as having like a contemporary music soundtrack, when you really listen to what's really going on, to the scene music, the mood-building music, it's orchestral often.
Because there's so much, there's such a huge color palette.
Well, Inga, let's talk to you a little bit about the fun and challenge of playing some of these Western music, some of these Western songs. Are these things that you personally have kind of grown up with or thought about before, or is this kind of newer to you to play this stuff and to hear it?
I've grown up playing in band and orchestra my whole life, and every now and then we'll play, you know, a arrangement including famous movie themes, of course. It's always a lot of fun.
So this one, tell me a little bit about the program as far as the Western flute piece. Which different ones are you playing, and what are you trying to cover in what you're playing?
I'm playing a flute concerto and as part of this concert, and that's not necessarily part of the Western theme. But the Western music, I'll be performing in most of the band pieces. It's great music. It's super fun to play, very recognizable themes.
Well, let's talk about the concerto then.
Okay,
so tell me about that, and what are you going to be playing?
It's a concerto by Karl Reinecke, a German composer, and it was sort of a mid-romantic era piece, I think. And so it's got lots of very melodious...
Does that mean like 1870s that range? Is that right?
I think in there.
Yeah, I forget the exact year, but yeah, it's late 1800s or early 1900s. It's super like romantic. Yeah.
Swelling.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, it's just kind of all over the place.
Yes.
It's kind of great and hard.
Highs and lows.
But people love that stuff.
Are you kind of drawn to it as well? Is it something you've played before, or is this newer for you?
I've never performed or played this piece before until working up for this, of course. But I definitely am drawn to the romantic era of flute music. I really enjoy the sounds and the... in this piece particularly, there's just a lot of really like great runs, lots of fast moving notes, and those are fun to play. They're challenging, but they're fun.
Tell me, as a flute player, are there certain well-known, you know, eras that are like, well, that was the golden age of the flute, or they were really pushing this idea during those times?
You can find, there's definitely I'm thinking of the Baroque flute era.
Okay.
I think that's a different even style of flute that they used back then than in the 1700s.
Yeah,
I'm looking at Todd.
These instruments change, and as metallurgy and all these other things develop, they change through the years,
They get keys.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a big thing, you know.
Oh, so the flutes then just had holes in them?
Yeah.
They
might have one or two keys, but mostly just holes.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting looking at how the flute developed over the years, and as it got more keys and more mechanisms, you know, of course, the challenge could be increased, so the pieces got more difficult to play.
Wow. Yeah. And that's is that and as they developed, did the was it trying to mimic other developments in other musical instruments, or was it just trying to make the action faster or easier to play?
I think
play,
it was
or?
More to like make the action faster and easier to play because it, so the flute, I mean, if we just say flute, that, I mean, we could probably trace its roots back to like cavemen.
It seems
right?
pretty, it's a, yeah. a reed it's with a hole very, in it, right?
Yeah.
The,
yeah. It's just, yeah it's sure. One of the simplest, well, mechanisms. It's not simple to play. Like no, a lot of times, yeah. beginners take weeks just
I
to
mean,
make
I play the
sound.
Bottled flute, personally.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then you could probably, you know, at least make a sound.
I've heard arguments that the flute is the oldest instrument in the world.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
The bone
yeah.
flute, even.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. You know, someone, there's one guy stretching a grass over something, plunking it, and there's another right. person blowing through the grass.
Right.
And yep. they're competing. Who's got the oldest instrument?
Right. Yeah, of course.
But right. Maybe the drums, too.
Drums.
You know,
yeah,
you
they
know,
might.
Percussions,
yeah.
probably.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, very cool. So, so lots of different genres, and then the romantic. What are the challenges? You were starting sort of saying the runs and things like that. But what are some of the challenges with bringing emotion to a musical piece through the flute? How do you
lots
sort
of
do
of
that?
Air.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Really about air.
I
fluctuation.
Mean, the flute takes like you know they say it takes just as much air as a tuba.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's no resistance.
Yeah.
You're blowing across the top
you're
of
blowing
it,
across
right?
the top
you're blowing
of the thing.
Over the tone yeah. hole, and so a lot of the air is essentially wasted in a sense because it's not going into the instrument, whereas blowing into a tuba mouthpiece, like all of your air is going in and mm-hmm. doing something. On the flute, you're blowing over a tone hole, mm-hmm. and so you lose a lot of that air. There's no resistance, no pushback.
When you play the flute, when you play tuba or trumpet, those kinds of things, you're actually – you're doing some different things with the positioning of your mouth. Mm-hmm. Is that the same with flute? Do you do different things to get different tonal qualities?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, your embouchure is what you call that.
Yeah. I learning
love it.
Something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I won't spell it correctly, yeah. but I'm writing it down.
Yeah, I won't either. But.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you shape your lips, your embouchure, mm-hmm. In different ways to make different pitches sound. Yeah, so like high notes, I would think more forward, and then for low notes, I'm going to think more open and down.
Interesting.
I know, it's hard to describe.
I mean, I, from a layman's perspective, just I've always thought it's just all about the fingers. That's
no.
how you change the tones.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Wow, that's really fascinating
yeah,
to think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and in some ways, the fingers are the easy part. It's like the thing you could teach a monkey to do.
Yeah. Hey.
I mean, no offense to monkeys.
It was hard for me. Well, this is so cool. So this is the Wild West and the Gentle Flute as all part of this, plus this mm-hmm. concerto that you're playing. And this is all happening tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at
right.
JDH, or at
no.
Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. And it's all happening tomorrow night. And Sarah, I was going to turn to you to sort of get a little bit more of the details of that. Plus, let's talk a little bit more about other things that might be happening.
Okay, well, let's just talk about tomorrow night yeah. a little bit. As we mentioned, it is at 7 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School. And you can get your tickets in advance if you go to the Jack building, or you can go online to the Jack website in their box office. You can also go to the Juno Community Band's website, and there is a link that would take you there. But you can also buy tickets at the door. They're just a couple dollars more at the door. So we have general tickets are $22, seniors are $18, students are $5, and we have a family price of $40. And if you buy them in advance, there is also a $2 fee for the ticketing system.
Great. Okay. Well, I have another little clip here I was going to play. This is just titled here, the ending of the concert piece. Does that have significance to you, or should we play it first and you can maybe comment on it?
Yeah, it's the end of the concerto, and you hear lots of lovely flute
oh.
runs.
Oh.
So,
yes.
yeah,
this
that,
is our,
it'll
that's
be
what
the
I'm wondering.
Playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to throw that at you, but that's what it is. So, before we play it, what should people maybe listen for as far as like that end piece? What are you trying to convey in that ending piece?
If this is the ending of the third movement,
the very last, about the last minute and a half or so.
Okay, yeah. So there's lots of staccato passages, lots of so that's when I'm playing lots of really short, quick notes, and I'm trying to use my embouchure and my tongue to make those notes clear, even though they're moving very quickly. So that was probably the challenge there, is trying to be clear, but also move very fast.
Is there a little bit of a literal storyline to this concerto in any way? Is there any sort of, you know, is there a story or a dialogue or something that's happening in your head when you're playing this and trying to convey?
Yeah. Good idea. Sometimes I do have like a little scene going in my mind. but the ending of this is just so technically challenging. It's mostly just focused on.
We're getting there. You're just going A sharp, A sharp, B, yeah. B sharp. All right. Well, very cool. We'll hear a little bit of this, and then we'll come back and talk more about this. It's happening tomorrow night at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Wild West and the Gentle Flute is the name of the whole program, and this is Reneke's Flute Concerto in D Major for Flute and Wind Band. This is the very little end of it here, played by Inga, who's with us right now. It almost seems like, you know, it was amazing to hear that run, but as you said, the staccato nature of those runs were normal. So often with the flute run, you'll hear just a beautiful sweeping nature of it, right?
Slur, yeah.
So it almost must feel like when you're playing it, like, why did he do this? You know?
Oh, yes, I've definitely had thoughts. Come on.
Cursing his name.
But it makes you think just like almost like springtime sprites in the air or something like that. I don't know, you know, something like that, right? It's very dainty almost the way that staccato thing happens. That's really cool. Well, tell me, there's a little bit, a few more things about this concert we want to mention. One is the Zantakahini Middle School Band.
Oh, right. Yeah. So in the second half, it is spring break, so we don't have the whole DZ band with us, but those folks who felt they just needed like a little bit more time in, you know, with the band are joining us. So we've got like 15 DZ players, I think, joining us for a couple of pieces. Actually,
That's
really wonderful to have the kids sit in with us, and we hope that they're getting a little bit of inspiration, at least, you know.
And are they going to be playing some of the Western sort of
stuff? So the Good, Bad, and the Ugly thing that they were playing on that.
Okay.
So they've got a bunch of the movie things, and they're doing what is called A Train Heading West or something, which is another thing they just played on their concert. But yeah, we're joining them on that one.
Very cool. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Yeah. And so tell me a little bit just how the program will go. You know, like what's the
right? So we've got if anybody's seen an oldish movie now, I'll call it that, The Cowboys, from 1972, I believe it is. John Williams wrote the soundtrack for that. Okay. You know, 5 years before Star Wars,
right?
And so we're opening the program with that. Then we go to the Flute Concerto, and after that is an intermission, and then we come back. We have the DZ kids with us and do a couple of pieces, and we do some more stuff from Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and Copland's Billy the Kid. is what closes out the program. I forgot something. What did barn I forget? Dance. Oh, the barn dance. Oh my God. that's a hoot. So yeah, there's like what?
It's a hoot nanny.
Yeah, it's called Barn Dance and Cowboy Hymn. And it's, oh boy. It's like, well, it can be 4 minutes of sheer terror or delight, depending on your level of comfort with the music.
Oh, I think it's more terror for the conductor than it is for the players.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because I can bring down the ship really fast with one wrong move. But then ending the program is Copland's Billy the Kid, which is this is a suite of pieces from his ballet. So, yeah, and, we kind of go through a lot of Billy the Kid's life.
And one note here, Western attire is encouraged.
Yes.
Yes, yeehaw. Right? That's going to be very cool.
Yep.
Inga, when you're playing this sort of you're going to be playing some of the fun stuff too, right?
Yeah.
But then also, are you still practicing right now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you are? Yeah. I was wondering, like, you know, is it just like you've got it on lock for a week, no problem, don't have to worry about it? Just want to maybe
run
it
the way that works.
No, yeah. Got to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
After 20th performance of it, maybe.
Maybe.
Is it a staccato part? Is that the hardest? Or is there certain parts that are just difficult for different reasons or that you just...
You know, it seems like every time I play it, something else jumps out at me. So
well, it's a really big piece.
Yeah.
It's a really big piece. It's like 20 minutes long in three different movements. So it's a huge range of stuff, and all three of the movements feel big and full. So she's got a heavy lift there.
Yeah.
This is a dumb guy question, but is that memorized or do you have it all sheet music or do you?
I'm not that cool. I definitely read sheet music.
That's cool too.
Yeah, I mean, after the 20th performance.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, and then you're reading the sheet music, but. Do you make kind of like mental notations about like mood that you want to convey or things like that? Or do you even write it or do you make notes or?
Yeah, I do it in my head kind of. Like the middle movement, the second movement is, it starts out a little bit more slow, lyrical. And so I think one of the, I can't remember what the word is, but it means like in a sad manner.
Mesto.
Yeah, that one. Carl Reinecke wrote that in, I think it was him. But he wrote that in the music, and so that helped me think, I should play this as if it was like a little bit of a sad melody, you know. And so that gives me an idea in my head of something to go off of as I'm trying to shape the line.
What's your training? Tell me a little bit about your background and training and like how you've come to be this amazing flute player.
I grew up playing the flute. I started when I was 9 years old. I asked for a flute.
That's kind of late almost, it feels like.
It is, yeah.
It? Yeah, right. So often kids are like, you know, they're 2 years old and they're carrying around their violins and their flutes and stuff, right? And
it's just discouraging to watch YouTube and you see like an 18-month-old baby playing piano. You're like, what?
I know. I always think, thank God YouTube wasn't around when I was a kid. I wouldn't have done anything.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's all been done.
Yeah. That was not my story. No. I started when I was 9, but I had flute lessons right away at 9, and that was a great way to start.
Did you take to it right away, too? Was, like, flute the instrument you wanted
so
bad to play?
Yeah, I got to choose it. Yeah, that was exciting, because I heard someone play it, and I was at church, and I was like, I want to play the flute. That sounds so pretty. And so then, my parents were super supportive, and they got me a flute for my 9th birthday and lessons to go with it. And so, I just started from there, and I never stopped playing. I did, of course, all the school bands and any orchestra opportunities that arose. I was in flute choir growing up. That was a pretty unique opportunity, I felt like, for where I grew up in Anchorage. My flute teacher also had a flute choir, so that was just super unique, super awesome.
Oh, yeah.
We went on tours. We went to, two international tours with the flute choir, so it was a pretty big deal for me back then. And then I also played with the Anchorage Youth Symphony, and so I just had a lot of great opportunities as a young person. And then I went to college up in Fairbanks, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I got my music education degree and my music performance degree up there. And I studied with Thorley McQuain at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So that was
Do you have another instrument that you love playing as well, or is it flute all the time for you?
I don't perform on any other instruments, but I do enjoy playing piano.
Okay.
And I teach beginning piano lessons as well as flute lessons.
Does it inform your flute playing in some ways, knowing another instrument a little bit or not?
I think, the more instruments you know, the more I think you understand about music in general, and definitely learning how to read bass clef in addition to treble clef, which for a flute player, like, all I knew was treble clef. I only read one line. But when you play piano, you got both lines. You got bass and treble.
Yeah.
So that definitely is really good to know.
And we should get you a viola next.
Yeah. That's getting a whole other thing.
I would think, like, getting into composers' heads a little bit, too, right? Most composers are maybe not composing everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would think. I don't know.
Well, so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know anyway, about that.
I'm not a musician, as you can tell. I just enjoy listening. Well, okay, so there it is. It's the Wild West and Gentle Flute. It's happening tomorrow night, March 23rd. It starts at 7 p.m. Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Where can people get tickets?
You can get tickets in person at the Jack or through the Jack website, or you can go to the Juno Community Band website, the current season page, and there's a link that takes it to you. And if you don't feel like buying tickets tonight, you can get them tomorrow at the door.
All right, sounds great.
But be
Thanks.
Prepared to pay more.
Yes, a couple dollars more at the door.
A couple dollars more, maybe like 25-cent discount if you're wearing a cowboy hat. And I'm just throwing that
oh,
in. That's
hey,
the
we
Andy
didn't
Klein
think of that.
Yeah. To save. Andy
next
said.
Time 25 you gave cents, us ideas. Right? But yeah, come in costume because the band is not going to be wearing formal black. We're going to be in the mood of the Wild West.
All right, very good. Yeah. Very good. All right. Well, thanks to all you for coming in. Have a great concert, and thanks for letting us listen in and your insights on music in general. It's great to talk to you.
Great.
Thanks so
thanks,
much.
Andy.
Thank you for
coming
us.
Coming up right now, here's Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A state ferry is making good time on the Inside Passage, churning up a wake as it cruises up the Marine Highway. This ferry has company. A group of Dahl's porpoises riding in the wake. These black and white porpoises are found only in the North Pacific Ocean, and they're fairly common in Southeast Alaska waters. They have an affinity for boats, and they may be seen bow riding, swimming alongside a fast-moving boat, or zipping along in the wake, creating a rooster tail splash as they surface. That rooster tail splash creates a hollow cone in the water, allowing the porpoise to catch a quick breath of air without completely surfacing. These speedy porpoises have markings similar to killer whales, and like killer whales, they are very fast. Killer whales and Dahl's porpoises are the fastest marine mammals, capable of swimming 35 miles an hour, twice the speed of the state ferries. Dahl's porpoises, like Dahl's sheep, are named after William Healy Dahl, an American biologist and naturalist affiliated with the Smithsonian Institution and the U.S. Geologic Survey. Dahl was one of the earliest scientific explorers in Alaska and made many trips before and after Alaska's acquisition from Russia. At the turn of the 20th century, Dahl was regarded as one of the world's leading experts on Alaska's wildlife, marine life, and native people. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Well, Folks Fest is just around the corner, and once again, the festival will be broadcast live on our sister station, KRNN, and live streamed on KTOO.org/folkfest. Juno Afternoon is going to also have many guests and groups here live in the studio. So today thought we'd just take a couple of minutes to listen to some of the musicians who've come in and played live for us here in the studio. And first one I want to play is a new song by Josh Fortenberry, and this is called Siblings. This was played live in the studio just a couple weeks ago. It's a little bit of a preview for Folk Fest.
You don't have to earn the right to cry. Misery's no competition you could ever win, still you try. Anything is overwhelming when everyone expects you to be fine. Mm-hmm. I understand the way you spend your time, and we both take to drinking. World is closing in on every side. It's cheaper than a therapist. Don't keep you in the house like getting high. Mm-hmm. Day that I turned 29, you were wearing all of grandma's jewelry. I was wearing tread off on my tires. wondering why am I alive? Loved you long as you have been alive. I carried you too young to walk. I've carried you too drunk to talk. Danced and fought and told the truth and lied. You thought me better than I was, and sometimes I pretended you were right. Mm-hmm. Day that I turned 35, sign a different name on all your papers. I still send you every song I write. Wondering how are we alive?
Thank you.
St. Bartholomew there from Whitechapel Women, and she's going to be playing at the Folk Fest. Going to be part of the Muskeg Collective, so lots of folks, and we'll be previewing that as we head towards Folk Fest week, and that's all going to be simulcast and KRNN when it happens. You know where to go for your Folk Fest stuff. It's right here at K2 and KRNN. Well, we're now back in the KTOO Studio 2K listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host, and Tristan Cameron and Ben Brown are here from Perseverance Theater. Thanks for coming in to both of you.
Happy to be here, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much.
Perseverance Theater's 40th annual travel raffle is coming up.
It's actually underway, Andy.
Underway.
We launched ticket sales in conjunction with the opening of Indecent last month, and they've been clipping right along, and Tristan's been doing an amazing job of outreach, you know, visiting a Foodland IGA at the weekend, selling tickets. I've been carrying them around and selling them to anyone I run into at the Capitol or anywhere even within a few blocks of the Capitol, and we're really excited. This is definitely the best set of packages and the best loot we have ever had for this.
This is a cool raffle because there's so many different prizes.
Yes, there are.
And it's only $10 a ticket.
Well, yesterday.
So that's what's so cool. It's like, yeah, for $10 a ticket, you have like a chance to win 12 different prize packages.
And each package has a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And inflation is real. But you know what has not gone up? A Perseverance raffle ticket. $10, the same as it was back in the Clinton administration. So we are somehow magically fighting inflation, but the value of the prizes has gone up. So I would say, respectfully, the value proposition of buying tickets for our raffle has risen dramatically, exponentially.
You're losing money right now by not buying a raffle ticket.
You can't afford not to buy, yes.
You can't afford not to. You're losing money.
Yep.
You're a fool. Buy a raffle ticket. Well, you know, the one thing that's really fun about this raffle, too, we were just talking about is that actually each prize package has kind of got an association with a play from the history, the vaunted history of Perseverance Theater.
That's right. And so it's where the travel raffle is 40 years old, but the theater is 45 years old. So I like to think a five-year-old theater came up with this raffle idea, and it was a precocious child that did that. So one of the through lines has been Alaska Airlines. Thank you, Alaska Airlines, for being a steadfast supporter. Once again, our grand prize is two Alaska Airlines tickets. Anywhere Alaska Airlines flies, and $2,000 cash. But we have fleshed out so much beyond that, haven't we, Tristan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have had many businesses all over Alaska very generously donate to us, and we're just appreciative of the community that we've developed, and we're always appreciative of people coming to the theater, coming to see shows, and then buying a raffle ticket on top of that.
It's one of those things, too, that's been going on for so long that I'm sure lots of businesses are like, oh, yep, it's that time of year, time to do the raffle, and people who buy the raffle ticket know it's the same thing. It's like kind of it's a rite of spring.
Absolutely, yeah. And once they see my email come through, they're like, oh, yep, here we go.
Right.
Yeah, we have a bunch of really cool stuff this year. Like including like whale watch tours, we have all kinds of like helicopter rides and Alaska seaplanes tickets as well, and it's every package has an amazing value, so you really can't lose if you buy a ticket. Even if you don't win a prize, all of the money goes to supporting Perseverance and helps us do what we do. It's a great cause to support.
And they all have kind of a travel theme. That's a really fun part of it, too. Even like the 8th prize or 7th prize has a one-night stay and a bottle of bubbly or like Alaska's Capitol Inn bed and breakfast or going up on the Gold Belt Tramway and having a night at the Silver Bow Inn. Like, they're all fun little, you know, home away from home vacation packages that even if you don't get the two large plus Alaska Airlines tickets, you're going to have a great kind of fun time getting one of these packages.
And I guess what I thought about as we were putting together this 40th anniversary raffle and all these packages is theater is a form of travel. You know, it transports you in time and space, sometimes to places that have never existed, sometimes to thousands of years ago, sometimes to the far off future. And it just lets you live a life away from the life that you're leading daily here in Juneau. So it really is a natural fit for a theater company to do this. But the actual real travel is fun too. And one thing I really want to do a shout out, because this is new. Holland America Group, Royal Caribbean Group, has been sponsoring the theater on and off over the years. But it's been over a decade since they'd sponsored us. So I reached out to my friend Wendy Lenskoog, and she very helpfully and generously was able to come through with a Royal Caribbean cruise for two with an ocean view stateroom. And we have just today added that to the prize package. We'll be sending out an email to everyone who's already bought a ticket in compliance with the applicable statutes and regulations. But the news is the ticket you already bought is now even more valuable in terms of what you may be able to win with it.
That's really cool.
It is super cool. And it's an example of how the visitor industry, I think, wants to be supportive of Alaska's capital city, because they have a lot of impacts on our community this summer. You know, we're about to see visitor season start again. So I was super grateful for that. And I think it's going to be a relationship we're going to be able to continue into the future.
Now, I was saying that all these prize packages get named after different things. It sounds like, Ben, you just went ahead and named them after a lot of your favorites through the years.
Well, you know, we keep a
not
running
that they
list.
They aren't other people's favorites too. I'm not saying that, but you did. You personally looked at this. You know, I really loved
these shows.
The
yes,
the Blue Bear. I really yes. loved Night of the Iguana.
I will say, I wasn't so selfish as to only pick shows that I'd been in. Although I was in, Lost in Kubla Khan. I wasn't in most of these actually, but I saw most of them, to be quite honest. I just picked some names that were fun. But if you look down the list of plays that we've done since 1979, it is really a cool list of plays, and it's the shared document that we all have access to on the staff. And in that document, the world premieres are in bold, and that's another really impressive thing: is how much world premiere work perseverance. Yeah, has been involved
been
in producing.
Real part of the mission of the theater, it seems like, to really be doing that exact thing.
And Leslie Ishii, our current artistic director, and Frank Delaney, our current managing director, they both started about 5 years ago when I started as development director. We're all really committed to that, because new plays are obviously the lifeblood of the future of the American theater, of the theater around the world. It's great to produce things that have been done before, the classics, the Shakespeare, the Tennessee Williams.
It sort of brings the people in a way, right? You know those old favorite ones that people will definitely go to the theater for. So you have to kind of make that decision when you're building out a season, right?
It is a balancing act. And luckily, Leslie, especially as artistic director, has a very holistic view of the way we should curate advanced seasons. We are all invited and tasked with reading a variety of scripts, scoring them, making our subjective, you know, comments on them, sharing that with the group. And then, you know, ultimately she and the artistic team make the final decisions, but it's definitely informed by all of us on the staff. And I just love that. Don't you, Tristan?
Yo, no, absolutely. It's a really community mindset when we're going into planning the next season, because we really want to make sure that whatever shows we're going to be producing in the future is feasible for every department, and also speaks to the communities that we serve. You know, everyone in Juneau, but also around Alaska. You know, just making sure that everyone's voices are heard through the art that we create, because that's what theater is for. It's a gathering place for people to come together to share and enjoy a beautiful story, and then to have wonderful conversations about it afterwards, and to have a new frame of mind and a lens to view art and life around us with.
Yeah, are there? How long have you been around for the theater here, Tristan?
This will be the coming up in April will be my second year.
All right.
Yeah.
So have you had an opportunity to see any of the plays that are mentioned here?
Not most of them, unfortunately.
Well, tell me a little bit about maybe one of the favorite ones that you've seen or been able to be a part of in the last couple of years.
I mean, I'm a little bit biased.
Yeah,
but
let's hear it.
I was in A Nice Indian Boy, the last show that we produced.
You guys aren't in theater because you don't have egos. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
It was pretty amazing, I guess.
Well, A Nice Indian Boy was a great show, and Tristan was a perfect fit for the part. When I read the script, I wanted to play the other part, but even with the magic of Botox and lights, I was a bit aged out, I think, for that part. But it's such a great script, and it was such a wonderful cast, most of whom, you know, were not from Juneau. Jack and Tristan were from Juneau. The rest we flew up from various places in California. Wonderful, wonderful Indian-American group. Just so talented, so well-received by the community. Nimi Phillips and Spice, such a great collaborator in providing the Bollywood dancing and just being a collaborative business partner. And, of course, Spice does have a prize in one of the travel packs. Packages, because that's what we get
go.
That
you
we get
that partnership.
That's exactly,
yeah,
right.
Exactly right.
And just like you know, we've got Alaska Seaplanes tickets that are
yes.
in there. But some other new things this year, in addition to the Royal Caribbean cruise, this is the first time we've had an Eagle Crest 24/25 10 visit pass. So thanks to Dave Scanlon and his staff up on the mountain for donating that. Also new this year, Wade Bryson gave us a bevy of Subway $20 gift cards. So 10 of the 12 packages have not a cherry on top, but a $20 Subway gift card on top.
Very nice, very nice.
It's pretty amazing too. We have a lot of prizes that are that our Juneau audiences will be able to benefit from. But then also, if you're like visiting from Anchorage or Sitka or anywhere on the Milk Run, it's like stuff like that. We have prizes and gifts available from all over the state. So Just know that you're not just purchasing stuff for Juno, you're also getting access to potentially stuff all over the place.
And they're all transferable too. So if you win something and you're like, I'm not going to be in Valdez this summer, but my friend's going, you can give them the Stan Stevens Glacier and Wildlife Viewing Cruise.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you give me a ballpark figure about what's the yearly budget? What does it cost to put on all these amazing plays? I mean, I think that people think that, oh, yeah, the community just gets together and it just happens.
No, we're a professional theater company.
You know, it's sort of like, let's talk a little bit about the budgeting.
Well, just to be very clear, Perseverance probably at its biggest expanse probably had a budget of $1.6, $1.7 million. That was before the pandemic, and it's before we kind of had to restructure when we maybe got a little bit larger than resources allowed to be sustainable. But our budget this year is in about the $1.1, a little over $1 million range. In order to get support from the Schubert Foundation, which is the nonprofit arm of the Schubert Organization, which is the largest owner of Broadway theaters on Broadway, and from the very famous Schubert family, you have to have a budget of $1 million. So that's a minimum threshold for a medium-sized regional theater. And we're very fortunate that we are able to continue to be able to generate the resources from individual donors, from foundation partners, from government funders like the City and Borough of Juneau, the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. But this fundraiser, our travel raffle, is a combination of individual support from people who buy tickets and businesses who donate the prizes. So it's a hybrid of two of those four categories that I look at as development director. And but it's also a lot of fun. So we're going to do the drawing live on Wednesday, the 17th of April. Our good friend Rick Kasnick at the Island Pub, who hosts our opening night parties for every play, is going to let us do it there in person. It's a Wednesday night. There are no ships in yet. I think there will have been one in by then, but not that night. And we're going to live stream it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, very cool. And, you know, just I think something, just having worked a little bit of behind the scenes on a few different plays as well, I always just think, too, I was amazed at how many people are working behind the scenes on every single one of these plays, too, and how many of those people are professionals that are coming in from out of town, even if they're here just for a few weeks in order to do, like, say, the lighting design or the stage design or some portion of it. So just the amount of effort and expense it takes to really put on these plays is something that I just think is always good to reiterate, and I know it's something you talk about a lot.
Well, Molly Smith, of course, after she founded Perseverance and ran it for 20 years, was headhunted to go and run Arena Stage in our nation's capital. She completely rebuilt that theater. She literally built the Mead Center for the American Theater around the existing, what's now called the Fitchlander Theater. So she built a big glass palace of performing arts around an existing building in what was a somewhat challenged part of our nation's capital, and which now is gentrifying is a problem, but it's also a much more prosperous and beautiful and attractive place to visit. Molly's work has followed us back to the theater, and we followed her to the East Coast. So Perseverance has a tremendous reputation for actors, directors, stage managers, playwrights, and scenic designers and lighting designers. And so we still have this cross-pollination of talent coming and going back and forth up through our current production, you know, with Indecent, which is running in Anchorage this weekend. We'll close on Sunday in Anchorage. You know, we have Hannah Wolf, a local Juno girl with the JDHS, but is now a very successful, sought-after director based in Los Angeles who's working on shows all over the country. She was here for Fun Home a couple of years ago. We're so glad to have had her back for Indecent. I'm sure we will have her back for more shows in the future. So you're exactly right. One thing I should mention, though, in order to make it possible to bring outside artists to Alaska, Alaska Airlines has been very generous with travel support, but individual donors of housing and transportation are also a really vital source of support for the theater. It's non-monetary, but people who have a room or extra rooms in their house, you know, we have a benchmark that there has to be a private bath and the room has to be private. There can be shared kitchen space. And then if there is a car involved, that really makes it a lot less expensive for us to have to pay for hotels. That stated, I will mention that the extended stay, actually the Aspen, because the extended stay is a different hotel now, has just once again started supporting us with giving us incredibly discounted rooms here and in Anchorage. But if anyone who's listening to this interview does have a room in the house or a car that they either want to give the theater or let somebody use, we are always grateful for that kind of support as well.
Yeah, it is truly a community kind of model of how to bring it together. Well, where are we right now in the season for the theater? Tell me what's happening right now in the theater season.
Yeah, we're pretty much near the end of our season right now, just wrapping up the show in Anchorage. Last show is going to be this Sunday at 4 p.m. And then we have some other programming. We just finished a young adult acting intensive run by our director of marketing engagement, Rio Alberto. And we have a upcoming director's lab run by our artistic fellow, Kylie Ferguson. And auditions for that are currently open. And it's going to be taking place at the theater, I believe, in the second week of April.
How do auditions happen for a director's lab?
Yeah, so we have information up on our website that has all of the information on like who to email about that. They'll be able to get back to you with sides and with kind of like a timetable on how that process is going to look. But other than that, we're kind of gearing up to start our planning for the next season as well.
That's what I was wondering. And how is that like a – what's that like a – 3-4-5 month process to plan and get ready, or how does that kind of?
Well, the process is actually pretty close to completion. We should have an announcement about next season certainly before Memorial Day. I'm not certain what the exact date for that will be, but we are pretty sure, you know, internally what the shows are going to be here and in Anchorage next year. But we're certainly, because we don't want to overextend, we don't want to try to do too many things and have to retrench again, to augment those mainstay shows here in Anchorage, we're going to do some more things like this director's lab, some more educational opportunities, not just for youth, but for adults as well. And we might have some more not fully staged production kind of activities, just so we're using the space more. I think we're also interested, we've been approached actually by some other theatrical entities who may want to bring an act to Juno, and depending on the act and the propriety of what it is and whether it fits in with our mission, and if we're dark, we may have some things on the stage there just to utilize the space more, generate some more revenue to support operations. So we're definitely going to be even more present in the community in the 2024-2025 season than I think we are in the current season. That's our goal.
Yeah.
It's just to meet people's desire for professional theater in every way that we can.
And then are there summer programs, star program, all that kind of stuff?
Yes, we do have our star program coming up in mid-July and into the first week of August. Again, that's headed up by our director of marketing engagement, Rio Alberto. Sign-ups for that are available at the current moment. Again, go to our website and you can send us an email and we can get you signed up for that. It's a great program. It's a 3-week class. The first week generally. Each week is split up into different aspects and different facets of what it takes to create a theatrical production. If acting isn't necessarily your speed, we have many other types of programming for you as well.
Awesome. Well, Tristan and Ben, thanks so much for the update about everything that's happening. And, of course, the focus right now is the 40th annual travel raffle. The prize packages are all awesome, and they're online. You can check them out, Perseverance Theater, and you can see what's there. $10 inflation-proofed dollar amount for the raffle ticket. It's amazing.
And Andy,
and
one more thing.
You get more and more every year.
Well, just real quickly, there was a temporary law passed by the legislature during the pandemic that allowed for online sales. That law has been made permanent. So the easiest way to buy tickets, although we would love to have you come by the theater or call me and I'll deliver them, is to go online to ptalaska.org, buy a book of 10 or individual tickets or both, and then that will be done, and we'll email you a picture of the ticket stubs, and you will be in the hat for the drawing, and then you can watch it live stream if you don't want to come to the Island Pub on the 17th of April. And we're going to have 12 lucky winners, just like we do every year.
That's awesome. The grand prize, 2 tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies, plus 2 large, yes, $2,000 cash. And the full prize list available on the website. Ben and Tristan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Raffle. Appreciate it. Well, guys, I just got to do my outro, but you can head out or hit there or not. That'll do it for Juno Afternoon, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM online, KTOO.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 o'clock. For more info on the show or to listen to past shows, you can go to KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon. Boston Christopher is the producer, and we had help today from Aaron Tripp. And our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Andy Klein, and thanks for listening today.